The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
For over a century, countless generations of Cub fans held out hope that each year would be the year. Players spent entire careers chasing an elusive title, only to stumble in achieving an unattainable goal. Season after season, teams wore the weight of those who had fallen short before them. They were instead forced to weather iconic moments of disappointment. That was until November 2nd, 2016. Up
feeling the weight of that game, knowing at the end of the day I'd be really, really happy or really, really not.
Just close your eyes and you just start thinking of the parade. You start thinking of what if you mess up. You start thinking of what if you're the reason. You start thinking of the good things. Okay, you hit the game-winning home run, the game-winning hit. So you got all of these thoughts and you close your eyes and they just start coming. Boom, 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 and it's like, whoa, okay.
There was butterflies. I mean, I think there has to be, right? You're either going to be world champion or you're going to think about how you let it get away for a long time.
I just remember not getting much sleep that night because, you know, you get so anxious in bed that you wake up and you're like, hey, it's time to go. It's only 3 o'clock in the morning. Like, come on.
While the Cubs' title drought was well documented, the Indians were trying to end their own championship misery. The 68-year dry spell in Cleveland was second only to the Cubs' 108-year gap. 176 years of combined baseball futility and frustration packed into one final night.
It's almost impossible to really wrap your mind around, you know, that an entire season and their big part of everyone's collective future will be determined just by, you know, a couple bounces here and there, or, you know, one game over the course of several hours.
The anticipation is like, can we just play this earlier than we have to? You just want to get there and get to your work and get prepared, and you know what you're up against.
I walked into the locker room, I'll never forget, and like 3 to 4 people were like, hey man, how you doing? You good? Like, yeah, I'm fine. What do you mean? Like, oh, this is your last game. I'm like, I don't care about that. Like, let's just win. I'll reflect on my career and all that bull crap when I'm done. Like, let's win. Like, I could care less about me right now. Let's win the World Series.
It was a little bit atypical, you know. I think you always have a little bit of, I don't know if it's anxiety, you're ready to get out there and be in where you're comfortable, being on the mound, you know. So I think it's the buildup that gets you sometimes.
I sat on this chair in the corner of my room in Cleveland and I had my dad's hat with me. Pulled my dad's hat out, put it on my lap as I wrote down the lineups. And again, this is what you have to understand about Game 6 and Game 7. There's no Game 7 if you don't win Game 6, and there's no Game 8, period. So it's an entirely different mindset working this game.
Separated by just 350 miles, Cleveland became a destination for not only Indians fans on that historic night, but Cubs fans made a trek all the way from Chicago by the thousands. By first pitch at Progressive Field, the tickets were the most expensive for a Game 7 in professional sports history.
It was a Game 7 crowd. You know, it was loud, it was everything. You know, the people outside beforehand, you know, they were ready to go. And, you know, Cleveland was hungry for another championship. They just won the NBA championship, and they were hungry for another one, and they knew what they were in store for.
How you got there at that point was irrelevant. It was like, hey, we get a chance to play one game to win a title, and that's a pretty awesome position to be in. You know, you give anything to be in that position in spring training, so now that you're actually there, stop, forget about everything else, just realize it's just a one game, it's a Super Bowl. And that's a pretty cool feeling.
I definitely was aware of the Cub fans. I'm definitely aware of that part of it. And I actually thought there were more Cub fans than Cleveland fans. That was the impression that we got.
Go Cubbies!
I was hitting flips, my normal flips, with Males, John Maley, our hitting coach, and the thing. And he came up and like said, like, hey, it's been a pleasure, and said all these nice things. And, you know, I'm like trying not to, same thing, like people more focused on me, and I'm like, screw me, I just focused on the game.
There's something special in the air, you know. There's no more bravado, there's no more narrative. It's just, we're here to play a game and determine a big chunk of everyone's future. And that hangs heavy in the air, especially before the game.
You dream about this. Game 7, we're in the World Series, playing the Indians, you know, and for the Cubs.
A night after jumping on the Indians for 9 runs in Game 6, the Cubs wasted no time getting started in Game 7. 4 pitches into Corey Kluber's third start of the series, Dexter Fowler became the first player in World Series history to hit a leadoff homer in a Game 7.
At the wall, and that ball is game.
When he hit that ball and hit a home run, you felt like there's a long way to go, but this is the best possible feeling at this point in the game that we could have.
Dexter leads off, hits a home run, and Corey Kluber dominates Dexter. I mean, Dexter hates facing him. He's not good against him, and he hits a leadoff home run and just sets the tone. We just believed, we threw it out there, that he wasn't going to be as good in Game 7.
When you get a lead, though, especially in that kind of game, even 1-0, it's monumental, really. You know, if I go out there and I give up the first run and that Cleveland gets a 1-0 lead, they have the momentum. You never know what can happen from there. So me not even having thrown a pitch yet in Game 7, just sitting in the locker room and watching Dex hit that home run, that gave me huge confidence. I was like, okay, you know, I got a 1-0 lead.
The stage wouldn't be too big for the 2016 ERA champion and Cy Young finalist. In fact, he embraced it. 11 days after silencing the Dodgers to clinch the pennant, Hendricks found himself in the biggest spotlights. But before he threw a pitch in Game 7, Joe Maddon and Theo Epstein had a pregame conversation about how they envisioned the game playing out.
Before the game, Joe asked me, how did I see the game going? I said, you know, I see 6 or 7 out of Kyle and, you know, and then Chapman. And Joe said, I see 5. And I asked him, I said, really, 5? He goes, yeah, I think I see 5 from him. I think he's going to pitch well, pitch 5, and then I see Lester, and then I see Chapman.
If you could go from Kyle to John to Aroldis, that's exactly where I was at before the game, and that's pretty good. If you have those three guys, you got 2 Cy Young candidates and arguably one of the best closers ever.
You dream of that moment as a kid. You know, you're out on the field. Dream about Game 7 of the World Series and how many people can actually find themselves on the mound in that kind of game.
He was being the same no-pulse Kyle Hendricks, just always keeping his head down and going out there doing his job. You know, that's my favorite guy to watch pitch. You know, he just goes out there, he competes, and he doesn't let the situation dictate how he feels.
But with the 1-0 lead, Kyle Hendricks and the usually reliable defense behind him struggled to find the rhythm in the third inning, sparking activity in a crowded bullpen. Crowded because everyone was available, and I mean everyone, including starter John Lester, who hadn't pitched in relief in nearly a decade. However, the professor pitched out of the gym, allowing only the tying run and putting an end to the Indians' threat for more. The Cubs' bats came alive in the middle innings. Chris Bryant accounted for 2 runs with exceptional base running, and Javi Baez chased Corey Kluber with a solo shot in the 5th. With a four-run lead, Kyle Hendricks settled in, while John Lester navigated the uneasy and uncharted territory of warming up in the bullpen.
I really didn't get nervous until I got into the bullpen, because once you get in, you do the whole routine of, you know, handshakes, fist pumps, whatever it is with all the guys, and you kind of sit down, then it's kind of like, okay, what do I do? You know, what do I do now? You know, like, do I stretch? Do I do the weighted ball? Do I, you know, use the bathroom? You know, what do you do? Like, what, do I talk to people? Do I not talk to people? Do, you know, it's, so it's, that's when it starts becoming, you know, that those nerves start kind of creeping up on you. And then all of a sudden the phone rings, and with 60,000 people or however many, that phone sounds like it's right here and it's on decimal 100.
Knowing that Lester would be on edge in this new role, Joe Maddon's plan was to bring him in only at the start of an inning.
We get to game seven and we go over, you know, kind of the best case scenario. Hey, if kind of, you know, it's the fan, we're going to bring in a reliever to get out of the inning and you're going to get the next inning, clean inning, no problem.
I don't want to put him into a dirty inning. I don't think that'd be appropriate, but being that it's on his like regular workout day, he's probably got a solid two in him, at least I would think. So we'll look to see how Kyle's doing, and then may have to bridge to John. We'll see how that all plays out.
Hendricks found his comfort zone, retiring seven in a row. But after a close call didn't go his way, the normally pinpoint accurate pitcher walked Carlos Santana on a 3-2 pitch, prompting the Cubs skipper to go against his pregame thought.
Part of the game plan for me was to get to John probably in the sixth, but chose to go to him there only because of Kipnis hitting.
With Lester warmed and ready, Maddon pulled Hendricks after just 63 pitches.
Boy, this is an extremely quick hook.
5-1 lead, it's just the competitor in you. You never want to come out of a game. You know, once you're on the mound and in the moment, you never want to come out. But you only focus on what you control. So I'm out there. My job is when I have the ball, make pitches. I see Joe coming out of the dugout. Trust me, I knew from the start of that game that my time was going to be limited.
While Hendricks bought in, the move was an unforeseen change. With everything hanging in the balance, a level of confusion began to set in.
The scenario changed three times in an inning. So it was, you know, I'm facing Santana no matter what. They wanted him to hit from the right side, not the left side. Then it's, you know, you get the sixth. And then he goes back out, and I went back to you get Santana no matter what. Then it was as soon as the phone hung up, called right back down, you have Kipnis no matter what. So that's when, you know, you start switching. Okay, now the phone didn't ring again. Now it's click. Now he gets two quick outs. And you're kind of like, okay, I'm not getting in this inning. And all of a sudden, ball one, ball two, and then end up walking him. Now you're like, oh man, like I'm actually getting in this game. So now you try to chuck a few more. And then now it's more of, okay, is he going to make the move? And then Joe comes out.
I guess it wasn't the most normal thing for us. And for the most part throughout the year, we've just been doing what's normal. And for us also at the same time, everything was kind of normal. So we're used to being in different positions. We're used to guys hitting different spots in the lineup, used to certain changes at a certain point in time. But I feel like that was one that we weren't, as players, we weren't really expecting that.
Personally, I was thinking, you know, Kyle's kind of rolling and let it keep going. But and then I was a little surprised that it happened in inning because Joe has mentioned this publicly, but he was looking for a clean inning. I thought he would at least get through five, but it was a little bit of a surprise. But again, with Joe, like, I always trust what he's doing because he's always got really good reasons for it. He's always thought it through, and it's never going to be impulsive. It's never going to be reactionary, and it's never going to be to please people. It's never going to be to avoid criticism. He's going to do what he thinks puts us in the best position to win the game. That's what he was doing, in his opinion.
Chicago area native Jason Kipnis was Cleveland's hottest hitter entering Game 7, but Joe Maddon liked this particular matchup. Kipnis was 0-for-6 against Lester in the series coming into the game, and although it looked good on paper, what happened next was reminiscent of Cubs' past.
This will be second-guessed. Wild throw, and it will go into the seats. Hits Ross, a run scores. Here comes Kipnis. He's safe. It's 5-3.
That was the frustrating part for me, is we had taken them out, and you know, we had allowed them back in.
When I came in and that ball, I threw that ball in a crapper, right, and went, and that one ball kicked off my mask. I trip over my own feet and 2-run score. I'm thinking to myself, you know, I'm like, you kidding me? Like, this just, I've been in this game 5 minutes. I just let 2 runs in.
That's a little bit of a you gotta be kidding me moment, you know, with maybe an extra word thrown in there that I can't say on TV. Because you just don't see that. I mean, you don't usually see the catcher, you know, stun, balls don't kick up that high and get him in the mask.
Just one of those deals, man. It's like it's one of those hard baseball things to understand, you know, because you have the right thought process and you just, Rossi's in the right position and you do everything right and it goes wrong.
A game that appeared to be in control had taken a sudden turn.
One of the points I tried to impart upon our guys before we began was that something bad's going to happen. Now, to me, that was under the category of something bad.
John Lester signed with the Cubs to get the team through moments like this, especially in a Game 7 of the World Series. Despite never lacking confidence, this was a staggering moment.
You see this stuff like once in a lifetime, and it happened to us right here, and those are two cheap ass. And those are two cheap runs.
Really, things that are, you know, you can never anticipate happening, but they did. However, when you get to that moment of the year, something bad's going to happen. And how do you react to something bad happening? John Lester just settled in and pitched great after that.
You're trying to keep momentum out of their side, and I was just like super down on myself for a minute.
Lester found comfort from the catcher that caught him more than anyone in his career.
You know, that's where Rossi's so good is. You know, he comes out there and he's like, "You all right?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'm all right." And he's like, "Well, you know, your stuff's good. Your stuff's good. Like, just trust your stuff. It's good right now. It's coming out good. Your fastball's good. You got good command. Let's go." It's like, okay. And so once you, and it's not a matter of him lying to you because it's not a lie, but it's one of those deals. It's just you're doubting yourself just that little bit where, like, man, do I really have, is my stuff okay? Because I don't feel great. And if it's not great, then I got to go off some other, you know, I got to start doing some other things. And that's just where that reassurance is helpful. It's just like, okay, my fastball is good.
He's like, man, forget that. Like, I'm going to go out here, pitch my game. And he starts dominating. You know, being classic left-handed John Lester, just going out there, shoving it right up him. It was great.
This is a guy who's not used to being in this situation. He's very regimented and wanted the ball. You know, almost demanded the ball to help the team. In a lot of ways, Joe was right. Maybe we don't win Game 7 in the World Series without John Lester and his performance.
After the chaotic entrance in the fifth, David Ross entered the batter's box in the sixth, squaring off against Andrew Miller, the game's premier reliever in what would be his final at-bat.
I remember getting on deck and just going, okay, like, let go of the 2 runs, like, just trying to mentally let go of that. You know, just so anxious, and I'm 0-2, like, my goodness, like, this is not going well. And then I just choked up my 2-strike approach, and he threw me a fastball up and away for a ball. And I'm like, I saw that. I remember going, okay, I saw that. And he threw it right down and where I hit it, and I was choked up, and I got good. I knew I hit it good. Thought about my family when I rounded to third, like my wife and kids in the stands, and how cool that was. Like, you know, so I, you know, pointed them.
You're like, holy smokes, he just, you know, he took the greatest relief pitcher, you know, in the last however many years, deep to dead center.
I get in the dugout and everybody's like, bro, you just went deep in Game 7. I was like, shut up, we got more outs to get, you know, like, forget about me again, you know.
What a way to go out, winning the World Series, hitting a home run on your last at bat. He's living life right now.
Looking back, and I know hindsight is 20/20, but looking back, the usage for Aroldis Chapman, do you regret in any way the way it was done and maybe the message that it could have sent?
No, not at all. It's about winning right now.
Closer coming in. Chapman with a Cubs up 3 in the 8th.
In that situation, I mean, I'm obviously all in. And I just know that Chappie's thrown a lot. I know that they had seen him a lot that series already, so it's kind of a tough shake when it comes down to him coming in the game at that point.
I don't mind the move. I mean, like, he brings in Chap, nobody in that dugout's going, man, why is he bringing Chap in right here? you know, everybody's like, yeah, that's our guy. Let's go. This is the guy we want. Had he been used a lot? Yeah, but we've all been used a lot at that point. So it's a matter of, that's the decision. And that's your manager. That's your guy. You gotta stand behind him if you like it or you don't.
Chapman, he's the guy you want in late in the game, that type of situation. You know, obviously the bulk, just the volume of what he had done in the series and you know, the game five, then the day off, but then used in game six, it, I'm sure, fatigued him a little bit to the point where he wasn't quite what he could be in game seven, and that's unfortunate, but he's still the guy. You know, I had no issues with going to him.
That's what he was there for. You know, that's why he was acquired, and that's why a big reason why we won the World Series. The difference was during the season, yeah, he was not used to that. He did not really necessarily want to do it during the season. We had that conversation, but when we had that conversation during the season, the point was, during the postseason, it was probably going to change. It was going to change, and he was on board with the whole thought. So again, these are conversations you have in advance, and again, he was there for that reason, and he was fine. I mean, he was definitely like just those 2 weeks before as the season ended. I think he might have thrown three times. We parceled his workout really nicely. He was not overextended against the Giants. He's strong. He's very strong, and he's one of the strongest athletes I've ever been around in my life.
Within the Cubs organization, a key observation drew concern about how dominant Chapman might be.
The one thing that was making me nervous was we had Ross catching Chapman in that situation, and I was in the stands in San Francisco for game four when the last time Ross was catching Chapman, and he threw all fastballs that inning, and he got through. I think he struck out the side or went 1-2-3 to clinch the division series for us. But it's the playoffs, so there's six Indian scouts sitting there writing down, you know, threw all fastballs, Ross and Chapman, all fastballs. So you get in this situation in game seven, and maybe they're looking heater a little bit more often. It's his best pitch, and that's why Rossi kept calling it.
The way the bats were going, you saw that they were kind of comfortable on him. They had his fastball timed up, something that kept making him throw his fastball. And I mean, in all fairness to Chapman, he was, you know, giving you what he had. And that wasn't necessarily his best when it came to stuff at the time. So just knowing that anything could happen, you just got to be ready for everything. And in my head, I was just hoping that we could once again stand up to another challenge as a team and be ready for it if the worst happened.
How did we lose our lead, first of all? But in this moment, at this point in the season, this point in the game, at this point in the Cubs' history, like at that moment, everybody in the stadium, everybody on the team is thinking, is this curse for real? Like, honestly, I was like, come on, like this can't happen, not right now.
I almost had a heart attack, I think. Just a little bit of devastation, honestly. Yeah, when you have a lead, you're feeling pretty good. But when he hit that homer, I mean, it almost felt like we were down.
The homer was never even in my psyche. And so when he hit it and it went out, I think I was just stunned because I had never considered that possibility, to be honest. You know, it wasn't something I ever considered. And so, honestly, I had to do like quick math. I'm like, oh my God, this game's tied.
He hits that home run, just the whole body just completely numb. I think I played with the dirt a little bit, kicked the dirt, but completely numb. Are you kidding me? Like, how did this happen? What? You just try to process it. All of our dogs just died in that dugout. We are down. We were given false confidence.
I'd gone into the clubhouse and they had, you know, all the stuff put up. You know, all the curtains and whatever you want to call them, the plastic and the signs and, you know, World Series champions. And when I turned the corner already, I'd seen it, and I'm like, man, this isn't right.
That's why Johnny and I get along, because if I saw it, I would have been pissed off too, and I probably would have tore it down myself. Even if we're up 5-1, I'd have probably tore it down. Just get it up when you're supposed to get it up. You got plenty of time. We're going to be out on the field for a little bit if we take care of business. Put it up when it's supposed to be up. But all fairness, it's been 100-some years, so they don't exactly know.
And it kind of made me mad already. And I just sat down in my chair and untied my shoe, and I look up, and he hits a homer. And it's like, you know, same thing. It's like Rajay Davis just hit a homer.
He throws the ball down, and throws the ball down, and that's probably the only spot that he could have done that with. So that's just, again, that's like a ball hitting David in the mask. The ball's in a perfect spot for this guy to hit a home run with, and he does.
I kept saying, dang it. Like, I was sick to my stomach. You know, and we're so trained, especially as a veteran player, we're so trained to just go ahead and turn the page. And that was a moment that I couldn't. Like, I needed, like, just remember, I think we had a visit from Boz just to slow things down. And I'm, you know, every time, you know, I was able to stop and think for a minute, I was depressed. You know, I don't ever say dang it or dadgummit during the, you know, or about, you know, bad words when something happens, but I just remember saying, you know, you gotta be kidding me, like, no.
Startled and stunned, the Cubs were suddenly on their heels with the weight of 108 alive in Cleveland.
I was pissed, and then I was, you know, I don't think I thought the curse was alive, but I, you know, you're aware of the narrative. You're like, you're like, shoot, you know, this fits the freaking narrative, and now it's on us to, now we have to come back and show it's not true. But obviously it fits the narrative. It's, you know, an all-time boner moment, you know, in that situation with four outs to go and putting it on a platter for them to tie the game up.
In the unlikeliest of ways, Rajay Davis sent Cleveland into delirium and the rest of the baseball world into shock. Aroldis Chapman threw 137 pitches in the World Series. No relief pitcher has thrown more in the last 30 years. Rajay Davis saw 19 of those pitches, the most of any Cleveland Indians player during the Fall Classic.
We have a game 7 tonight in Cleveland, and the weather's not looking too bad. Temperature's very mild. The rain chances, that's going to up as the game goes on. So if we see extra innings, there's a good chance we're going to get some rain in the forecast.
Still in shock from the unlikely events of the 8th inning, the Cubs failed to score in the 9th. With Mother Nature starting to intervene, frustration was beginning to mount. And for Jason Hayward, it was reaching its boiling point.
When I came in the dugout off the field from third base after Dex hit that ball at the middle, I didn't look at anybody's face. I went down the tunnel, went far enough from the dugout, around the corner, around the bathroom, and yelled some things as loud as I've ever yelled, probably. And just had to get that out. Then got ready to go back on defense, and then the rain comes, but.
So you had a pre-meeting kind of before the meeting then? Or you just went?
I went by myself and let some things out by myself to whoever listened. But it was all because, like I told you, when Chappie came in and when it got to that situation right before Davis hit the home run, I was like, even if he does something good for them here, we're going to bounce back from him. And like I said, we did that in the top of the ninth. We just got thrown a curveball from a place we didn't expect it to come from.
Aroldis Chapman, I can't imagine how much he has left.
At that point, I'm like, just almost masochistically, like waiting for the swing and the crowd and everything else, just praying it doesn't happen. But I was not feeling good in the bottom of the ninth.
One run right here, and that's it. It's over. We go home. So then I got Chapman in the mound with the guy's got his confidence level low because he just gave it up in the eighth. So I'm like, okay, I got to try to do something different.
Game 7 is going to the town.
When we got out of there, I was like, whoa.
Wow, we really got through that inning. And knew we had the meat of the order coming up. So that was a big moment. I didn't know how Chapman did it. I didn't know who was pitching next. Any pitch could have ended our season. So that was a nice relief. And then before you know it, the tarp's coming out.
What followed was something only out of a Hollywood script.
Umpires called for the tarp and started asking guys, hey, like, weight room real quick. You know, it won't take long, players only. I knew I wanted to say something. I knew they needed to hear something. I knew I had to say something to get off my chest, but say it to them too, so they could get off their chest and so they could all know that we're in the same thing together.
He's a guy that doesn't speak up a whole lot, and when he speaks his mind, you listen, because it comes from the heart.
He's probably the best teammate I've been around. Some of the things he said in there, it just locked us in, gave us the confidence, and he told us we were the best team, and we believed it.
We all go in there, and Chappie wasn't in there, so I'm like, where's Chappie? And somebody went and got him, and he's like, ball, right? Which said the world to, I think, all of us, like, this guy is pouring his heart and soul, everything he's got, into this team, and he's just, you know, he's so disappointed. And so we're trying to lift him up and be like, bro, we wouldn't be there without him. You're the guy that helped get us here, and you know, everybody is responsible for everybody. It's not one person's fault. It never is one person's fault.
The last thing you really want to do is come together at that moment, and that's why it was important, because it was like our team needed to come together. You know, like in that moment when we felt the most stress, like maybe this is not going to happen the way we want to, for us to not get secluded and go away, but to come together and say, this is happening, this happened, but we're not done. And we needed a voice to say that, and Jason Hayward was that voice for us.
You know, got guys crying in there. You had, Chapman had just given it up, and you've got everyone else saying, like, no, we're going to pick you up. You know, we're going to go out and do this. And Hayward, who had such a tough season, having the guts and the innate leadership ability to speak up.
It's almost like a standing eight count. You know, you get smoked and you're down a little bit, but you're able to get back up, regather yourself, and get back out there and fight again. So it was the most fortuitous mini rain delay timeout I've ever been involved in. Yes, did it matter? Yes, it did matter.
The thought that we would get all the way to that game and then have it go against us was, it was just unthinkable. Like, to have to go back to Chicago and say, okay, well, we got this close, but next year we're going to pull it over the line. Because you spent all this time in the weak moments, you know, up to the game and during the game, thinking about just how hard it is to get to that moment. You don't want to see that moment get away from you.
For me, the biggest point was him standing in front of that team, taking the leadership role, and how everybody in that room was just looking at him like he was larger than life, and everybody ate every word that he said.
You know, I didn't even do it to lead anything. I'm just being myself, you know? I just did it because I give a damn. And, like, when I told them I love them, like, I mean it. Because they saw that in me already. They know who I am. They know, that I respect the game, but I respect them, and I'm out there for them every day, regardless of what kind of day I have. And so that's just me being me. And to hear guys appreciate it and respect and all that stuff and say those things, it's awesome. It gives me chills every time somebody talks about it. But I just did what I did because I could not do it. I could not say anything.
I felt defeated. I know our players were kind of shell-shocked and down, walking off the field after the ninth inning. And I feel like, you can't say definitively, but I think we probably would not have won but for the rain delay.
As soon as we left that room, it was like, we're not losing. You know, I said that in my mind. I'm like, I'm not losing. I'm getting a hit. I'm either going to hit a homer or I'm getting on base somehow. You know, I was like, I'm not getting out.
We're in the dugout, you know. It's like Tyson and Holyfield. This is like the heavyweights. This is like Ali, Frazier.
Hey, Riz, it's not how many times you get knocked down.
It's how many times you get up. Just doing the whole Rocky theme.
And he spells back and goes, it's how many times you get back up, and screams and starts yelling.
Kind of rah-rah, to be honest, and saying, you know, It's going to make it this much better, boys. We're the best team.
A spirited Kyle Schwarber prepared to lead off, with the heart of the order ready to follow his lead.
I'm confident in myself. I believe in myself and my abilities, and you know, I believe that if I put my mind to it, I'm gonna do it. You know, you can't tell me that I'm not gonna do something.
Schwarber comes up to me, I'll never forget this. Schwarber walks up to me, he goes, this dude throws me cutters in. He goes, I'm gonna back off the plate, he's gonna throw me a cutter, it's gonna start middle, and I'm gonna homer. And I was like, I love you. You go deep. And when he says it, you just believe him.
I wanted to make the adjustment of getting off the plate. It's because I knew that he was going to try to throw me inside. There was no way they were going to go away from me, because that's where they thought that I was hitting the ball, was away. They wanted to keep coming in. So I'm like, you know, I'm going to step off and make that middle look, that end look middle.
And Kyle is the perfect guy to lead off that inning. He's the perfect guy because he has, you always talk about guys that have no fear and all this stuff, but he honestly has no fear. He's like, I'm going to hit a homer. I'm probably going to hit a homer, but I know I'm going to get a hit. So it's like that automatic confidence boost of we've got our rally before we've even started, So it's, I think that's the biggest thing is guys left that meeting with, okay, clean slate. This is a new game. This is, first inning. Here we go. Let's roll. 0-0. All right, Kyle, lead us off.
Leadoff man is on. Schwarber pumping his fist down the first baseline. He's on to start the 10th.
Smoked it pretty good. And give him the fist pump down the line. I was like, yeah, let's go. It's time to start that rally.
This guy shouldn't even be here right now. And he's doing this. We can do this. If he can do this, we can do this.
Schwarber hit .438 with 7 hits in 4 games in Cleveland, and was the first player in World Series history to record 3 or more hits after having none in the regular season. He wasn't even supposed to be there. And if he hadn't, well, who knows? Maybe there is no Game 7. Instead, Schwarber became a Fall Classic legend.
the legend thing, I got a long way to go for that. I do. And I don't want people to get too hyped up on it, but, it's definitely is an honor. It's an honor to be called that, because these Cubs fans have seen a lot of history. And for that to be said, it's super cool.
3 batters later, Ben Zobrist sealed MVP honors, delivering the biggest hit of his 11-year career.
Zobrist, that's a base hit! Cubs will take the lead! Almora digging into the plate! Zobrist delivers 7-6 in the 10th!
I don't think I ever could have understood what kind of impact it would have had. You can't think about that. You can't think about what it's going to do. You just got to do the best you can in that moment.
One of the reasons Ben Zobrist is a Cub this year is because he stays in the moment and he's delivered in those clutch situations for other teams. And, of all the guys on the lineup or in the lineup, he could be the one you'd pick to be in that clutch situation.
Call it what you want. If we were cursed before, we were blessed in that moment, right? I was blessed in that moment. The team was blessed in that moment. Cub fans everywhere were blessed in that moment.
The Cubs sent 8 batters to the plate in the 10th, the most of either team in Game 7. Miguel Montero's single gave the Cubs their 8th and final run, putting them on the brink yet again of a World Series title.
He gave me a good pitch to hit, and I got the hit. I got really emotional. I got really excited about it because, when you got that opportunity, and especially in the Game 7, and you come through it, it's just a great feeling.
But the Indians didn't go quietly in the 10th, putting the tying run on with 2 outs. Having warmed up 3 times prior, Joe Maddon turned to Mike Montgomery for the final out. He had never recorded a save in his major league career.
He carried a huge load through the postseason, so he was fatigued at this point anyway, coming into the game, let alone having warmed up as much as he did. So he didn't have much in the bullpen, so he was going off of that. And then what Miggy told me, he told Monty on the mound. Monty goes, how are we going to attack this guy? And Miggy goes, I don't know. Well, let me think about it for 60 feet.
When he came to the mound, he goes in and he says to me, he's like, how do you want to go through this guy? I'm like, I don't know. I really didn't know. I have no idea how I was gonna start him. I don't know. I didn't have any idea. So I'm like, I don't know. He's like, oh, but don't worry. Just throw whatever I put down. I figure it out.
The Cubs win the World Series. Bryant makes the play. It's over, and the Cubs have finally won it all. 8-7-10.
In as classic of a game as there's ever been, the Cubs' historic win ended the longest drought in professional sports history, sending Cubs fans across the country into a once unthinkable state of euphoria.
You win the World Series no matter what team it is. Amazing. To do it with, and break the curse and a new tradition here, a new era that no one has ever seen, is an amazing feeling. And I just look back at, I've seen some clips of just in slow-mo of the final outcome, and they pan out to fans and bars everywhere. You see every bar in this city, no one's talking, and it's going slow motion, and you see the ball hit my glove, and the bars are up, everyone's erupts, we erupt. It's just, you get chills thinking about it.
You know, when it hit his glove, I mean, it was just a sense of relief that we finally did it. The fans finally got what they've been waiting for a long time, and all our hard work, you know, paid off. And that was the happiest moment of my life, maybe besides getting married.
108 years, wow, pretty much it. And then you think of all the people that benefit from this. I think about my coaching staff, I think about the organization, the players, but then you think about families, people sitting at grave sites having shots and a beer, which I love, used to love to do. All that stuff, and again, your mind just jumps everywhere in a nanosecond, and you process all this stuff like that.
I didn't come to Chicago to break a curse. I came to Chicago to be expected to be in the playoffs, to win one, if not multiple World Series.
A lot of relief and a lot of joy. Maybe relief first, I don't know. Maybe co-equal, but I hate letting people down, and it's one of the worst feelings in the world. And I knew I never wanted to face having to move on from the Cubs without having won a World Series. You know, I felt like that's why they brought me in here, and that's what I wanted to do, and it was unacceptable to leave without winning a World Series and making all these great people happy.
Is that the photo?
That is it.
Tell us why it sums up the emotion of Game 7.
Because I'm screaming my head off. I'm going, yeah. Then like, there's the Rizzo, you're the kind of happy, like the, yeah. And then Zobrist's like shocked. What just happened? Like I'm telling you, that's all the faces of all the Cubs fans throughout that whole Game 7 and possibly the World Series. You know, I'm telling you, that's it. There's the you're excited as all get out. There's the happy, and then there's the shocked.
Perspective will change as years pass. But for an organization dubbed for decades as the lovable losers, the realization of what it means to have won a World Series with the Chicago Cubs is not lost on those that did it for the first time since 1908.
That, to me, is the coolest part, is to be a part of it. Go down the history books. No matter, like I said, if you threw a pitch, if you didn't throw a pitch, if you didn't get in at bat, you didn't steal a base, you didn't do anything, but sit there and pat your guys on the butt and cheer, part of history. You know, so that's how I looked at it, and that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a part of history. I wanted to be a part of that curse-breaking team.
We'll be a part of this forever. I mean, you know, we'll have opportunities for, you know, as long as we want them. And you know, I feel so honored to be a part of that. I mean, just to be on the team that won the World Series for the Chicago Cubs. I get to put on a uniform every day, and I feel so grateful for it. But I don't think anything could ever top what we just did.
Yeah, it was pandemonium. It was just, you know, I got a video a friend of mine took from above of our reaction after we won, and you watch it, and it was just, I think, more relief than I would have imagined. You know, if you told me at the beginning of the year, okay, what's your reaction going to be after you win Game 7 of the World Series? I would have said just all the sort of work we've done, all the work everyone's done, all the 108 years of despair, and I would have thought all those things would come to my mind, and like none of those things came to my mind. It was just, we survived that game.
Unlike a lot of accomplishments people can have in their lives, this one can't be taken away. It's just, the game is over. The winner has been decided. It's in the can forever. And a lot of other things in life happen. It goes up a little bit, then it goes down a little bit, then it goes up a little bit. It's over. It can't be taken away. And the couple dozen guys on the field, the hundreds of people in the organization, the millions of fans everywhere, everyone that pulled together to get to this point, they get that forever.
Game 7 of the 2016 World Series between the Cubs and the Indians was unlike anything ever played before. Lasting nearly 5 hours, Game 7 was the most watched baseball game in 25 years.
Game 7 was the greatest of all time. I mean, in so many ways. It was crazy. It was epic. It was emotional. It was took a couple years off my life. You know, I mean, there's so many words. It's. I mean, Game 7. That's the greatest baseball. It's the greatest baseball game I'd ever been a part of in that moment, and what all was at stake. It's the best. It's for me. It's just, I mean, what better way to go out? It's the end. That's what I'll say. That's the end. Game 7 was the end.
The greatest game in the history of baseball.
Game 7 was legendary.
Heart-wrenching, because I lost about 20 years off my life. The best feeling ever.
The best sports game I've been a part of. I've seen, I'm pretty young, but I don't think I've seen too many games like, the 2016 World Series Game 7. Crazy.
Game 7 was epic. I mean, that's the only word for it.
It was as great a feeling as I've ever had in my life. To have that kind of experience with people you believe in and people you respect, and have it hang in the balance like that and be so dramatic with so much meaning and resonance behind it. I don't know that we'll ever replicate that again. I don't know that I'd ever want to.
Game 7 was beautiful. It was beautiful. And probably as it should be, nothing was supposed to come easily for the Cubs, Chicago Cub fans. It didn't come easily, and it'll never be forgotten the way it concluded.